Live from the 607, it's the Ocho Duro Parlay Hour, where we're talking everything going on in the world of sports. Join in the conversation on social media with the hashtag ODPH, because here we go. Welcome to an all-new edition of the ODPH Podcast. What is happening, everybody? Thank you so much for joining us this week. My name is Ken M. Joining me in studio, as always, you know him. He's the co-host. His name is Padawan J.
Let me talk to you.
Yeah, and boy, do we have a lot to talk about in the land of sports. And we definitely want to get that conversation rolling. But after the show, we want to keep that conversation still moving along. So, Pat, where should everybody go?
ODPHpodcast.com.
Right on. Swing on over to the website. Sign up for all the social media accounts. Check out the T Public Store link. Sign up for the Patreon link. One tier, $2 a month.
Yeah.
Check out the blog section, the classifieds, which has friends of the show, such as 3FM Podcasts, Dragon Master Games, and many more. Also, the directory. Pat, how many providers are we on?
895,708.
I don't question him. That is why he is a statistician to the stars. So make sure to drop a 5-star review on your favorite podcatcher wherever you're listening to the ODPH on. Also, check out the music section where you can find out about such bands as Brian Wolf and the Howlers, Floodlands, which definitely a happy birthday to the one only Jimmy Gazdick.
Yeah.
Today, so if you catch him out or wherever you see him this week, definitely wish him a belated one wherever you see him at. Also, shout out the Robots, Second Suitor, Tom Jolo, many, many more. Basically, if it's anything and everything that is the ODPH. You can find it at odphpodcast.com, and remember on social media to use the hashtags odphpod. Kicking off the sports edition, obviously this past weekend was a one to remember for the National Football League. It was the 2024 NFL Draft, where the collegiate players came out and were selected to take their game to the next level. Some surprises, some hits. So, Pad, let's break down the top 10, shall we?
Well, first of all, I think we got to give our kudos and our shout-outs to the folks out in Detroit and in the immediate area.
Great presence, yes.
Holy hell, especially since they set a draft attendance record with over 775,000 fans in attendance. My God, that was insane.
It was absolutely wild.
Yeah, getting to the draft, of course, the first pick in the NFL draft was to the Chicago Bears, and as everyone and their mother predicted, it went to Caleb Williams from USC, the quarterback.
No shock there. He was the projected number one for quite some time.
Yeah.
So, I mean, honestly, we'll have to wait to see how he does. He did get some upgrades and weapons for the offense this season. So
yes,
we'll talk about that a little bit later in the segment. But next up, the draft moved right along.
Yes, it did. And that was to the Washington Commanders, who took Jaden Daniels, the quarterback from LSU.
No real shock there. He was the number one projected on my personal board, but him landing in Washington is great. I think he will do a lot of good things there with the new regime in place.
Yeah.
So just we'll have to see how they do. I think if the Commanders, go 500 this season, I think that's a win.
There had been a lot of talk, you know, especially in the days leading up to the draft, where, you know, the team was kind of hesitant on him. I guess some of the interviews hadn't as gone as well as they might have hoped, that they might have been a little shy on, you know, using such a high coveted pick for him. And I started to buy into some of that, but clearly some of that might have been smoke and mirrors, because they got a quarterback, and they got a good quarterback. You know, he's a dual threat guy, which, boy, with the way that NFC East is stacked in terms of defenses, you definitely need a guy who can do you both, you
absolutely
know, through the air and on the ground. So Washington's definitely got a stud there at quarterback there. It's just you got the other pieces around him you got to work on and see where it goes from there, but we will see. Next up at the number three pick was the New England Patriots, who took Drake May, the quarterback from North Carolina.
Well, I would say no shock here, but this one was a pick that many were waiting to see if they were going to stay put or actually draft May at this position.
Mm-hmm.
Because the Patriots, obviously with a new regime in place for them as well, yeah, I think, we had to kind of get a gauge about what they were going to do with such a high draft pick.
Mm-hmm.
There was talks about teams trading up to this spot to go get May,
yeah,
but the Patriots held on, drafted their quarterback of the future. Pad, yep, you are the resident Patriots fan here. What are you feeling about this?
Well, one, I'm just glad this whole process is over, because I'm a part and on some Patriots fan pages and boards like on Reddit and such, and it has been obnoxious as all hell since the regular season ended to watch everyone and their mother do their mock drafts and their projections on why they should take this player or that player. I swear to you, everybody that got taken in the first round of the draft at some point got projected to be picked by the Patriots by a fan. It's been obnoxious. So for one, I'm glad this whole process is over. Two, I'm still not sold on it just because I kind of agree with what Bill Belichick said on the Pat McAfee broadcast of the draft on his YouTube page. He's got the talent. Clearly, I mean, you look at the numbers, you look at the stats, but at the same token, he doesn't have a ton of starts.
Mm-hmm.
But that's the nice thing with the Patriots. You know, he's not, I don't think, you know, I didn't think Mac Jones would come in and be the starter when he got drafted, but I ended up being wrong with that. But I don't think he's going needed to be the starter. You've got Jacoby Brissett. You've got, you know, Bailey Zappe is still on the roster as we record. We'll see with, you know, another guy the Patriots drafted in this draft, like in the fifth or sixth round, whatever it was. We'll see if Zapp stays, but there's going to be a couple guys I think that might be ahead of May. Let him sit. Let him learn for a year or as long as you can. Maybe put him in to start a game late in the season if it's, you know, out of reach. Because I don't think the Patriots are going to do anything stellar or sexy this year in terms of a playoff run or a deep run or even, hell, a Super Bowl. But if you get to that point late in the year where it's kind of just garbage time, nothing special, nothing sexy, give him a shot, give him a chance, and let him develop, because I think that was one of the biggest drawbacks for Mac.
Mm-hmm.
Now, granted, you can look at the personnel change and the rotating carousel they had at offensive coordinator that has hurt quarterbacks in the past. Case in point, Alex Smith. How many offensive coordinators did Alex Smith have in his first 5 years in the NFL? I think it was four or five. It's insane. But you look at how good he was, you know, in the first year, took the step back in the second year, which, again, I'm going to asterisk until the day I die, you know, because you had a defensive coordinator calling offensive plays, but I digress. And then the third year, you brought in an actual offensive coordinator, and it stunk up the joint. Let Drake May develop. Let him learn. You know, he's got plenty of guys in that locker room he can learn from, the coaching staff. You know, even from history's past, he can. You know, I'm sure they can give him Tom Brady's phone number, and he can go down to wherever Tom's living these days and do a summer camp with Tom Brady.
Mm-hmm.
Hell, Drew Bledsoe. I'm sure Robert Kraft or some of the front office guys still have Drew Bledsoe's number on call. Have him call Drew Bledsoe. Work with Drew Bledsoe. You know, he doesn't need to start. So right now, if you're asking me how am I feeling if he's starting tomorrow, not confident. You know, just because I don't think he's got the body of work and I don't think he's quite game ready yet. But if you ask me and say late November, mid-December, I'm like, all right, you know what? He's had an entire off season to learn, including OTAs, mini camps, and, you know, preseason on top of everything they do during the week. At that point, I might start to feel, okay, you know what? This might work. We'll see. But for right now, I'm not sold, but I'm willing to be proven wrong. I got so hyped up and I got so behind the Mac Jones train of, yeah, I've got a jersey, not afraid to admit it, you know, that I got burnt by it, you know, and I don't want that to happen again.
Well, I think the longer they can let him sit, the better.
Yeah.
So if they can let him sit, he'll be fine.
Absolutely.
But I think if you're expecting him to go in day one and win the starting job, I would just say from what we've seen thus far, I don't think it's going to pan out.
I don't think so.
I really don't. I think the longer he can learn the game at the pro level, the better.
Mm-hmm.
He is a project. He is not game day ready right now. So hopefully the Patriots are going to have him hold a clipboard for quite some time.
Yeah.
And then we see what we get from him after that.
Yeah, I mean, because just looking at his collegiate stats, I'm going to pull up how many games he actually started. That automatically goes to the NFL, of course. But in terms of doesn't give game stats. I'll have to look that up later. But getting on to the next pick in the NFL draft, that was the fourth pick to the Arizona Cardinals, who took Marvin Harrison Jr., the wide receiver from the Ohio State University.
Well, the Cardinals have always had great luck with wide receivers at this position.
They just don't stay there unless your name's Larry Fitzgerald.
Mm-hmm. So this one is a huge weapon for the team because obviously they need a spark. Kyler Murray needs something to get that offensive rolling.
Uh-huh.
They've been pretty stagnant for a while, so yeah. Harrison should be able to get that ball moving in the right direction.
Yeah, no, it should be good. And, it just all comes down to what Kyler Murray's got, you know. Mm-hmm. And again, that depends on how Call of Duty's doing this year.
Yeah.
You don't believe me? Well, look it up. But no, I mean, look, and I pulled up the Drake May stats. He's got, what is it, 4, 18, and then another 12. So about 30 games started in 3 years in college. It's not great, not sexy. We'll see. The next pick in the NFL draft went to the Los Angeles Chargers, and they took the offensive tackle from Notre Dame. Looks like Coach Duffy's got a new jersey on order.
Mm-hmm.
They took the offensive tackle, Joe Alt. And I got to say, dude, you're like the number 5 overall pick. Have a little more excitement.
Well, I think he's just a very reserved guy from what we've seen in interviews with him post.
Yeah, yeah.
But for what Jim Harbaugh wants to do out in L.A., this is a very solid move.
Dude is a monster. And I mean that in the physical sense.
Yeah.
6'9", 321. Holy shite.
We heard rumors of a possible trade with Minnesota for Justin Herbert for this pick. But the Chargers held on. And, you know, a little bit surprising to a degree because I thought that they would take who the Giants took in the following pick.
Yeah.
But offensive line for what Harbaugh wants to do, and we have to remember he is a very run-first coach.
This is true. Look at the way he ran that offense in Michigan.
Exactly. Whoa. So, and he also did the same thing when he was coaching San Francisco way back when.
That's true.
So it makes a lot of sense that he took a lineman in this position. He took the best one off the board, so this will only help them get better. It just depends on what the overall offensive mindset's going to be now with Harbaugh as head coach.
Also, you definitely need help for Justin Herbert, who was running for his life, metaphorically speaking, in 2023 because he was sacked 29 times.
Yikes.
That is not ideal.
No, definitely not.
Next up was the New York Football Giants at the number 6 overall pick, and they took Malik Nabers, the wide receiver from LSU. And I got to say, much as it pains me, I like this pick for the Giants. The Giants, what is the one thing the Giants have been lacking the last number of years? Someone dynamic on offense. They had Saquon, which coming out of college, being a Penn State guy, I go, listen, this dude's dynamic. I got to watch him, you know, on a weekly basis because Penn State's on a lot up here and where we live in the New York area. You know, he's dynamic as all hell. And then injuries and everything else, you know, kind of derailed that. But their wide receiver core has not been anything stellar since what? I'm blanking on his name, Victor Cruz. The Victor Cruz days. I know there's a couple other guys.
OBJ.
OBJ days. Yeah. They, you know, so it's been, you know, 5, 6, 7, 8 years, however long it's been. So I like Malik Nabers. You know, he's 6 foot, 199 pounds. If I'm not mistaken, he's LSU's all-time leader in receptions with 189, receiving yards with just over 3,000. Dude's a downfield threat and a monster. And if only he had somebody to throw to him, it might be money, but hey, you get that figured out, it'll be a real good connection.
Well, that's the big X factor involving the Giants.
Because Daniel Jones will be injured from the sounds of things or on not playing at the start of the season.
Right. They're going to have a lot of question marks going into this season.
Mm-hmm.
Taking Nabers at this position is smart, but it's also foolish.
Okay.
Here's the thing. If you don't have stability in your quarterback position, which, let's face it, they have not.
Yeah, since the Eli Manning days.
It doesn't matter who is on the outs. They have to get somebody to get him the ball. Daniel Jones, we've talked about many times, is not the answer.
Holy Christ, I just looked up Daniel Jones' sack numbers in 2023. So, mind you, he only played in 6 fucking games in 2023. Yeah. He was sacked 30 times.
5 per game.
In 2023, oh, my God.
Yeah, so you have to think that they should have gone offensive line. This is where I thought Joe Alt would have been a perfect fit for him. I was surprised they did not go lineman here.
Yeah.
But this was also going to be a question of would they take a quarterback at this position? It would have made sense if they did.
Yeah.
But the Giants' offensive line has been their Achilles heel for years now.
Holy shit, I just looked up Tommy DeVito's numbers.
Yeah.
Fucking Christ, he played 9 games. He was sacked 37 times.
Yeah.
Holy fuck.
Yeah, they have a horrible offensive line.
I realize this might be shocking to Giants fans that I don't know this and I'm not familiar with this, seeing as we're in Giants country, but I don't exactly go out of my way to watch Giants games.
Mm-hmm.
I follow Giants games based on how my friends are reacting on social media. If they're real quiet, not good. If they're real loud, well, we know.
Well, that's the whole thing with this team is they have potential, but yet they have not reached it. And it all starts at that offensive line. That is their biggest weakness. Yeah, I mean, you can go through every quarterback they've had. It's double-digit sacks.
I think I just pulled up the last one because Tyrod, I looked it up. Tyrod Taylor was another one of their quarterbacks that had start in 2023. He started and he played in 12 games. He was sacked 17 times.
Yeah, so they lack their biggest need.
Yeah.
I mean, point blank, they lacked. And Neighbors is a great pick, but it doesn't matter if he can't get the ball because the quarterback's sacked.
Uh-huh.
And I don't know if the Giants have really done any upgrading in that position.
Based off the draft, no, because and I've got this information based off the NFL.com article, and they're grading everybody, and they list all the draft picks.
Mm-hmm.
They took, obviously, Malik Neighbors, who we mentioned, the wide receiver. They took Minnesota safety Tyler Nubbin at the number 47 overall pick, Kentucky cornerback Andrew Phillips with the number 70 overall pick, Penn State tight end Theo Johnston with the 107th overall pick, Purdue running back Tyrone Tracy Jr. with the 166th overall pick, and their last pick was UCLA linebacker Darius Muasau with the 183rd overall pick. You notice any...
Yeah, they didn't take any linemen.
Yeah. Yeah, they're missing a lineman. So unless you go get somebody through free agency or you are confident that your guys are going to upgrade or improve this during the offseason, yeah, it's going to be more of the same.
Yeah, that's going to be the biggest problem here, and that is something that, unless they do something about it, Neighbors is great, but he is going to have a very lackluster season because nobody can get him the ball. Enough said there.
Next up was the Tennessee Titans, who took J.C. Latham, the Alabama offensive tackle. Also a monster, 6'6", 342 pounds. Good God.
See, this is where I think the Giants should have taken him once Alt was off the board.
Right.
Because I said the Giants need to fix that offensive line.
No, I agree.
It would have made a lot more sense, albeit, though, they wanted to make a big splash for the offense. Mm-hmm. But this is why, to take a look in comparison to Tennessee, Tennessee is always consistent.
Right.
Because they always build up their offensive lines. That is why you can take a look at the running backs they've had over the years.
Yeah.
They've always had great careers.
Also needed help on the offensive line because unlike the Giants, or much like the Giants, I should say, Will Levis was sacked 28 times in 2023. Also like Daniel Jones, he only played 9 games.
Mm-hmm. So, I mean, this pick makes a lot of sense for Tennessee.
Yeah, that does.
No question about that. So we'll have to see how it plays out.
Yeah, and then next up with, I believe we're up to the 8th overall pick.
Most controversial pick of the draft.
Oh, yeah, it is. With the 8th overall pick in the NFL draft, the Atlanta Falcons took Michael Penix Jr., quarterback from Washington.
Well, sorry to make everybody's ears pops there. This one, most puzzling of the draft.
Uh-huh.
You just gave Kirk Cousins from Minnesota a $100 million plus contract.
Mm-hmm. I'm pulling up the stats, the numbers now. Yeah.
And you go out and get Michael Penix Jr., who was not projected to break the top 10.
Uh-huh.
He was projected to be a first, maybe second round pick by some boards.
Mm-hmm.
He has had some injuries concerns for a couple of his seasons in college.
Uh-huh.
So taking him here is very high risk, high reward.
Uh-huh. Now, here's the other thing, too. You are correct. They signed Kirk Cousins to a four-year, $180 million contract. There's one of two ways this can go. I'll do one and then I'll do the other.
Mm-hmm.
So they've got him signed through technically 2027. I'll go that route. If he goes all the way through 2027, so the next 4 years. Michael Penix Jr. is currently, as we record on, late April 2024, 23 years old. He turns 24 on May 8th, so about another week or so. If Kirk Cousins goes all the way through with this contract, Penix will not be starting for them until he's 28 years old.
Yeah.
Now, the other way this could possibly go, and might be entirely likely, who knows, there is a potential out after the third year. So then it's only a three-year, $135 million contract, but irregardless, it's a difference between starting at 28 and starting at 27. It's not ideal.
Mm-hmm.
So why the hell you went and did this when we've said since the Atlanta Falcons lost the Super Bowl to the Patriots, after being up 25 points, they need everything in the kitchen sink. They've got some decent pieces with Kyle Pitts, Drake London, and then the running back Robinson.
Bijan
Robinson. Those are some decent picks, but you need other things. You just paid a quarterback $180 million and gave his agent a book deal because if he's not writing a book on how he gets these contracts, dude's missing out on money. But Why would you take a quarterback? It makes no bloody sense.
No, it doesn't make any sense.
Take an offensive guy. Take a defensive guy.
This is why we say, who is Atlanta?
What is Atlanta?
Atlanta misfired. Probably the biggest misstep of the entire draft.
Yeah, and it was in the first top 10, so everyone was watching.
Mm-hmm.
Good Lord. Next up at the 9th overall pick was the Chicago Bears with their actual first round pick, not one they got through via trade. And they took Rome Odunze, the wide receiver from Washington.
Well, very solid pick for the Bears.
Yeah.
They need somebody, obviously getting Caleb Williams. They want to have a big target for him to throw to. Odunze does fit that description right there.
Oh, yeah.
With Keenan Allen, too, he does have somebody to mentor him for a year because I believe Allen's contract is only 1 year.
I think so, yeah.
And they've rebuilt this offense that they will be very productive. Am I going to say playoffs? No, but they will be productive if everybody stays healthy.
They should be decent.
I will say, though, this pick, I think, threw off much in the draft because I think how teams were going about – with Atlanta taking Penix, that threw a panic in.
Yeah.
And I think for the Bears, is Odunze definitely threw everything off, too, that they felt that they needed to grab a wide receiver here. Because I think on most boards, Odunze was projected to be somewhere in that 11 to 15 range for picks.
Yeah.
And I think once that didn't happen, that threw off another team that we will talk about a little later.
Mm-hmm.
Into what they decided to do for their first round.
I mean, the nice thing for Rome is that he doesn't have to do much, you know, at the start of his career. Keenan Allen's there. DJ Moore's there. You also got Cole Kmet, the running back, and DeAndre Swift.
Mm-hmm.
So he's not even coming in to be a number one in the team this year. He's just going to be there, learn, and develop.
Yeah. So there's a lot of upside here with this one.
Yeah.
So we'll have to wait to see how it plays out.
Next up was a trade, actually, because it was supposed to be the New York Jets. However, they traded back one spot with the Minnesota Vikings, who picked J.J. McCarthy, the quarterback from Michigan.
See, this one definitely surprised me a little bit that the Vikings traded up one.
Mm-hmm.
Because I don't think the Jets were going to take McCarthy. So they could have stayed put and been okay, unless they really felt that somebody was going to trade up to that 10 spot with the Jets.
I think that was more the fear they had, because if the Jets were really going to take McCarthy, they wouldn't have taken Minnesota's phone call. They'd have flat out told them no.
Mm-hmm.
I think the more likely fear was that the Vikings were scared that one of these other teams who definitely needs a quarterback, like a Denver who's in two more picks,
mm-hmm.
was going to jump in there and steal things.
Yeah. I mean, that's a big question mark that they have here. So I think this forced the Vikings to make a call.
Yeah.
They definitely moved some pieces around to get up here.
Yeah.
They got their quarterback of the future, which they desperately needed.
Oh, yeah, they do.
McCarthy really became the hot name in the draft only over past couple weeks. So this one, we'll have to wait to see how it plays out in Minnesota. I think for what the Vikings need, he will be very adequate.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that he will make them into a contender. I don't know if it's enough to keep Justin Jefferson happy. So we will have to wait to see how it plays out. But he does have some weapons there to work with.
Yeah, Aaron Jones is there.
Yeah, TJ Hockenson.
Yeah.
So that's a big help for a tight end for a rookie quarterback.
You got to figure McCarthy's starting, though.
Well, yeah, he has to.
Because the other quarterbacks on the roster, and this is going off the depth chart from ESPN.com, Sam Darnold,
mm-hmm.
Nick Mullins, and Jaren Hall.
Yeah. So it's more than likely that he will. It just depends if he's going to be ready. But I think, obviously, winning the national championship does help.
Yeah.
So we'll have to wait to see how that plays out.
Next up was the 11th overall pick. And as we alluded to, it was the Minnesota Vikings, but they traded with the New York Football Jets. And they took Olu Fashanu, the offensive tackle from Penn State.
Very solid pick.
Oh, my God, yeah.
They need to do something for that Jets line. I think Fashanu is going to be the guy that really helps solidify it.
Mm-hmm.
I think that, yeah, this is a very smart move for them, too, because I know that there was talk about them taking a quarterback. I don't see him taking that with Aaron Rodgers there.
No.
But you never know what was going to happen. So very solid move for the Jets.
Yeah, no, it made all the sense for them. Fashanu's great offensive tackle. I think there was something like he was one of the few tackles in the nation who didn't give up a sack last year.
Mm-hmm.
Something insane like that. So, hey, he's going to pay off dividends for them.
Yeah.
Next up was the 12th overall pick in the NFL draft, and that went to Bo Nix, the quarterback from Oregon.
Him landing in Denver really was shocking to a degree.
Yeah.
I mean, the one thing with Oregon quarterbacks, much like I say with USC, much like I say with Alabama quarterbacks, is it their talent or is it the system? And I think that with Nix, he's a solid quarterback, but I don't know necessarily if he was a first-round pick in my eyes.
Not to me. I mean, he always had good numbers, you know, and it's always a solid dude. But I think the thing for me with, and I've always respected Oregon for a lot of years, but that's just been because, you know, the system. I mean, Christ, the Patriots tried to copy. I forget who the coach was at the time. But like they tried to copy that hurry up offense style they did there. So I think it's always been a product of the system and having some talent around there. I think it's also been a case of you look at what was the Pac-12 and that was very cyclical with who was dominant. You know, it was USC for all those years in the early 2000s. And then Stanford was dominant for a couple of years there in the early 2010s. And UCLA had a few flares and flashes in there. But then the last couple of years, it's been Oregon's time. I mean, that's not to say anything against Nix's stats. I mean, he had 3 years at Auburn where he threw over 2,500 yards his freshman year. His first year in 2019. 2020, he threw over 2,400 yards. 2021, he threw just shy of 2,300 yards. Then he went to Oregon and threw for almost 3,600 yards. Then this year, he threw for over 4,500 yards. He's got the arm and he's got the stuff, but, you know, like I said, I think it's a case of, you know, the system and then also the talent around him.
Yeah, that's the one thing with Oregon. That's what you get a lot of times in the pros. And even with Sean Payton, I mean, the run in Denver has not gone the way I think everybody was projecting it was going to be.
No.
It's going to be interesting to see how this plays out. Like I say,
Again, you got to figure he's going to start.
Oh, yeah, they're forcing him to start.
Because you look at the other quarterbacks on the Denver Broncos depth chart on ESPN.com. Jarrett Stidham famously threw a pick six his first pass in the NFL. For who? Patriots.
No, I was going to say New England.
Zach Wilson and Ben DiNucci.
Yeah, exactly.
Who?
No, that's the thing. He has to start right away, and I think that, unfortunately, he's in a bad position. He's in a very bad position.
Yeah.
And then to kind of cap off where we're going to be diving into a little bit, the number 13th pick.
Yeah, that was the Las Vegas Raiders who took Brock Bowers, the tight end from Georgia.
Solid pick for the Raiders.
Great pick for the Raiders.
Yeah, I understand that some teams or some analysts were thinking they should go quarterback.
Yeah.
I think that for what they got with Bowers, I think definitely helps a need.
Yeah.
Because looking at their depth chart of quarterbacks, sure, it's not great.
Right.
But it's serviceable if you don't have who you want. And I don't think that there was anybody that they were going to really mortgage their franchise for to jump up and get.
Well, and I think even at this point, you look at just who's come off the board already.
Six quarterbacks and 12 picks.
Six quarterbacks. So Caleb Williams, gone. Mm-hmm. Jaden Daniels, gone. Drake May, gone. J.J. McCarthy, gone. Bo Nix, gone. Like, at that point, it's not anything to me. And I'm not, you know, one of these Field Yates, you know, whatever types that it's, you know, I'm studying every draft pick. But I'm just looking out on the surface and going, everybody after this is nothing real sexy.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I think if memory serves, I saw a post, Bo Nix was the last NFL or the last quarterback pick in the draft until like the fifth round when I think it was Spencer Rattler or something absurd like that.
Yeah, we'll just have to say, like, I agree with you. I mean, I can't remember who it was too, but there was something absurd like that. But in this situation, though, I think it works out because you have to remember, too, a lot of these quarterbacks that are taken in that first round are not going to be all pros.
Right.
Unfortunately, it's the law of averages.
Some of them are going to be busts.
Yeah. So I think for the Raiders, what they are smart is Bowers definitely helps fill a need. You need to have more offense, especially if you want to keep up with the Chiefs and the Chargers.
Uh-huh.
Bowers is perfect for this.
Yeah.
And especially with Minshew there, he does like to go to his tight ends a lot. And I think they're sitting on somebody maybe in free agency. You might see somebody get moved next season.
Ha, I was right. Looked it up courtesy of the folks over at SportingNews.com. They got a whole long article, but they got the list of all the quarterbacks drafted this year. Bo Nix was the last one at the number 12 overall pick who went to Denver, as we alluded to. The next quarterback picked in the NFL draft wasn't until the 150th pick, and that was the Saints taking Spencer Rattler from South Carolina.
Yeah.
So at that point, it's Spencer Rattler, Jordan Travis from Florida State, Devin Leary from Kentucky, and then you got Michael Pratt from Tulane.
Mm-hmm. Well, that's what I say. You never know, and that's why it's buyer beware.
Yeah, so I think at that point, did they need a quarterback in Las Vegas? Sure. I mean, they've got Aiden O'Connell, Gardner Minshew, Anthony Brown Jr., and Carter Bradley. None of those are sexy.
Mm-hmm.
But when you put them up against some of the names I listed that were still available and end up getting drafted later in the draft, nothing's really, you know, jumping out of me. I mean, some of you might be going, oh, what about Spencer Rattler? I mean, the buzz I kept hearing was, I guess Spencer Rattler did like some reality TV series locally for when he was in high school.
Mm-hmm.
And some video of it had like turned up again. It's like, hey, this guy's entering the draft. Remember this? And a lot of teams saw it and went, ooh, that's certainly something. Like, it wasn't anything damning or like behooving, but it certainly didn't do anything to help his character or his draft stock.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. So after that, it's kind of a pick and please, so to speak.
Sure.
Because there wasn't anybody that really jumped out here until we start diving into pick number 28.
Uh-huh.
And this one I will be more than happy to address, Pad.
Yeah, so originally the 28th pick in this year's NFL draft was to the Buffalo Bills, who had a host of needs, some of which we detailed on the show in the last couple of months, wide receiver being one of them.
Mm-hmm.
And for whatever reason, and admittedly, I went to bed at this point because it was well after 11 o'clock. I stuck around long enough to see if Tony Khan was actually in a neck brace or not. So I was, and laughed and went to bed. And then I woke up and saw that, because I was curious, you know, you being a Buffalo Bills fan, a lot of folks I know being Buffalo Bills fan, what the Buffalo Bills do?
Mm-hmm.
And then I get up and I see the reactions of Buffalo Bills fan, and I went, what the fuck happened? So I dig up the draft cast, and I look and see the Buffalo Bills traded with the Kansas City Chiefs
mm-hmm.
for the 28th overall pick. A bunch of other things went into it, but that's the important part. And the Kansas City Chiefs ended up drafting Xavier Worthy, the wide receiver from Texas.
So
who, oh, by the way, ran the fastest 40-yard dash at the NFL Combine since at least 2003 with a time of 4.21.
Yeah.
Dude's running like he's got someplace to be.
Well, the biggest question mark I had here was, why are we trading with the Chiefs?
Exactly.
And I don't understand this, except in my humble opinion, they were fully banking on Roman Dusé to be at number 12 with Denver.
Could be.
And they were going to make a trade to go up there and get him.
Could be.
And when that didn't go through, I think that they were sitting and waiting on Brian Thompson Jr., who went to Jacksonville via trade.
Oh, okay. Could be.
And I think what happened is their first two picks were off the board, and they were not ready to go for who had been slated the entire time
uh-huh.
with the Bills. So they wanted to wait to go to the second round and load up.
Sure.
Now, granted, I think Brandon Bean and company had a very, very solid draft class.
Sure.
I fully do. However, though, in that position, you have to go get somebody, but let alone you're trading with your biggest rival right now.
Any of the other teams in the NFL, I could understand.
Absolutely.
Even the Miami Dolphins could have understood it. You know, I would have been like, oh, that's interesting. You don't see that too often. But nothing surprised me more than seeing they traded with the Kansas City Chiefs, who arguably didn't really need a wide receiver. I mean, you look at what they've got. Pacheco's their running back. They've still got Clyde Edwards-Helaire. They've got Rashee Rice there. They added Marquise Brown in the offseason, but they've still got Kadarius Toney, among a host of others. And then they've got Travis Kelce, who, oh, by the way, today as we record, signed a contract extension for another 2 years at like $35-plus million a year, making him the highest-paid tight end in the NFL. So they've got pieces abound, and Marquise Brown is an obvious upgrade from every other wide receiver they've got on that team, not named Rashee Rice.
Mm-hmm.
So they didn't really need him, but now you've got this third guy who, mark my words, Bills fans, and I said this to you, I've said it to a couple people, mark my words, Bills fans. I don't know if they're playing each other in the regular season, but that's you know, meaningless. If the Bills and Chiefs end up meeting in the playoffs, whatever round it is, from the wild card all the way to the AFC championship game, if this player has a breakout game like I think he can, I'm going to sit here and say I told you so.
Well, I agree with you.
Like, did you not do your homework on the guy? Because Buffalo, I think everyone agreed, needed a wide receiver. They lost Stephon Diggs, you know, and some of the other pieces. They're good, but they're not number ones. You look at, you know, Xavier Worthy's speed and everything else he's got. That's potential. If he bulks up a little bit and adds a couple pounds of muscle and, you know, works on his game, he could be a number one. You know, but you sit there and you're like, nah, we're good. And then, you know, I just don't get it.
Well, the only things that we can really figure out with this, as a Bills fan, Keon Coleman from Florida State had been somebody that had been attached to the Bills.
Sure.
Since the beginning of the draft.
Sure, sure.
So the fact that they went back to get him in the second round and literally waited there, it was a gutsy pick. Now, does he have number one potential? Yes. Yes, he does. But at that position, I understand maybe they were a little skeptical and they wanted to build up some stock for the later rounds because there's a lot of needs they need to do because of caps issues.
That's true.
But it's also a crapshoot to do that much building that late. You just don't know. So if you have a chance at a bona fide starter, and especially one with Worthy, unless they felt for whatever reason he was not the go-to, and he was not going to be a number one, because this whole number one pick that they had was replaced off on Diggs.
Right.
That's literally the number one pick they had. They did it with Coleman, so they are fully banking that he is going to be the guy behind it. So it does make a lot of sense to do to get stocked up later. However, you just don't know, and that's really putting a lot of faith into somebody that, let's face it, we just don't know how it's going to pan out for him. And I think for what the Bills needed to do for Josh Allen, Coleman does fit a little better for him.
Right.
But working and giving the Chiefs another weapon when they need a wide receiver, absolutely mind-blowing to me.
Yeah.
But taking a look at the rest of the Bills draft, they addressed a big need with Cole Bishop in the second round, pick 60 from Utah.
Sure.
They have safety issues. Justin Poirier gone. Miami. Micah Hyde, don't know what's going on there, possible retirement.
Right.
So they need somebody in that secondary that can really make some noise. Bishop is a solid pick.
Right.
Dwayne Carter, number third round pick, number 95, from Duke. Solid lineman.
Sure.
So I think that adds some very much needed depth to the line. So we'll have to wait to see what happens there. Fourth round was Ray Davis from Kentucky, running back.
Should add some depth.
That's what they need. And you know what? I'm not mad about that.
Somebody on that team is going to crack 100 yards in the regular season before week 10.
And especially for a non-drafted player, they just signed Frank Gore Jr.
Right.
So he will definitely get in there. I think he could be the steal of everything. But looking at the rest of their picks, though, they went defense for the rest of the time except for one pick.
Sure.
And I think they addressed a lot of needs. So it does make sense, but then again, it's also high risk, high reward, so to speak.
Mm-hmm.
Because everybody goes, well, they missed on Patrick Mahomes. Let me make a bold statement here.
How many teams missed on Tom Brady?
Yeah. Patrick Mahomes, coming out of college, the only thing we knew he had was a big arm. If he went to Buffalo, I guarantee you at the time he would not have had the same success as Josh Allen. Because where he plays is a lot different elements than it is in Orchard Park.
Plus, who was even the coach at the time?
Yeah. So, I mean, McDermott was just coming in.
Right.
So, I don't know if that would have fit. Andy Reid is a better fit. Plus, Mahomes got to sit behind Alex Smith for how long?
Yeah, that's true.
So, you have to add that into factors. Understand, the Bills traded with him at the time. But, it also led to them getting a lot of value players added to their team. Now, granted, some have left because of free agency, but if you look at the pick at the time, it makes sense.
Yeah.
Plus, it worked out for the Bills because they have Josh Allen.
Mm-hmm.
Now, granted, is Josh on the same level as Patrick Mahomes? It is debatable.
Sure.
I'm being very realistic about it. Josh does more with his feet than Patrick does.
Mm-hmm.
But it equals out. But at the end of the day, it looks at who goes and wins Super Bowls. The Bills haven't done it. And I've been very critical about why, and I'll even make the bold prediction to kind of double in on what you said, Pat.
Okay.
If Worthy burns them this year and the Bills get knocked out of the playoffs by the Chiefs, Bean and McDermott are fired.
Have to be.
They're gone. And who's going to come in? It'll be the biggest Hollywood story ever. Bill Belichick.
Maybe.
He'll come in on the revenge tour like his name was Taylor Swift. And if he somehow, some way leads Buffalo to a Super Bowl win, he cements his legacy more deeply than it already is.
It's the one place I can realistically see it happening.
Yeah.
You know, where he is, let's be honest, he is a control freak.
Oh, completely.
He like wants his hands on everything. And there was a reason that for all of those years he was in New England, he was the head coach and general manager.
Mm-hmm.
It's the one place I can see, you know, them put, you know, offering him the job. He gives his list of demands and then sits there and goes, oh, by the way, I want to be GM.
Yeah.
I want player control. And they go, given your body work, yeah, sure.
Yeah. So, like I say, if he comes in there, I think that would help. But we have to get through the season. And if McDermott wins, hey, listen, more power to him. I just get nervous when he gets around that two-minute mark in every game.
Yeah, that's true.
Because he overthinks everything.
Then again, with as much fun as Belichick had on the Pat McAfee thing, I would not be surprised if he likes that whole TV deal.
Well, I would say.
He's doing Pat McAfee every Monday during the regular season, he said.
Well, I say, he's enjoying the time off. I don't know if he wants to stress about coming back.
And flexing his bling.
Oh, yeah. Well, that's the whole thing. I think what would happen is if, and we're all speaking hypothetically here.
Sure, sure.
If the Bills backed off enough money, new stadium and a whole nine for him to come in, he wins one there if he knows he can win one. Because, I mean, that was the whole thing. He was tagged about going to Atlanta. What did Atlanta have?
Running back, a tight end, and a wide receiver.
Yeah, is it enough to get to the Super Bowl? No. So,
hell no.
So listen, it makes sense for him to, if he wants to go to Buffalo. But I'm just saying, and if we'll all come back to this worthy pick, and if the Bills get burnt by him, trust me, some heads are going to roll next season.
Uh-huh.
And then, I mean, Pat, final thoughts on the draft.
I'm just going to talk Patriots a little bit. Just okay. Because, you know, we only talked to one pick. I like their draft, you know, better than some years. Like we mentioned, they took the quarterback, made Drake May, with their first pick, and that was third overall. They took the wide receiver, Jalen Polk, 37th overall from Washington. They took the Penn State offensive tackle, Caden Wallace, 68th overall. The offensive guard from Texas A&M, Laydon Robinson, at the 103rd overall. The wide receiver from UCF, Javon Baker, at 110. South Carolina defensive back, Marcellus Dial, at 180. The Tennessee quarterback, Joe Milton III, 193. I wonder if Tyler Mack's going to be getting a Patriots jersey now. And then their last one was the Florida State tight end, Jaheim Bell, at 231. I like their picks. You know, one, I like Drake. I like them taking a quarterback in the first round. You know, we'll see if it works out or not. I like the pickups of Polk and then Baker later, because the one thing we've said since arguably Randy Moss left, the Patriots have lacked a number one. Kendrick Bourne was probably their number one receiver on the roster, you know, and he's not even a true number one. He's just the best talent-wise they had at the position. They obviously added K.J. Osborne in the offseason, but we'll see what happens with that. You know, sometimes guys go to a new place and it just doesn't work out system-wise. Juju Smith-Schuster, they signed in the offseason last year, didn't work out anyway, shape, or form, so... You know, you got Jalen Slide in there, and I like his stats. You know, admittedly, didn't know much about him because West Coast guy, playing on the West Coast. I'm an East Coast guy. Looking at his stats, though, you know, 69 catches, 1,159 yards, 9 touchdowns last year. Not bad. Could fit in very well. We'll see. You know, and then the other receiver they added, Javon Baker from UCF, saw some of his stats from when he was in college, dug some of those. Last year at UCF, he had 52 catches, 1,139 yards, 7 touchdowns. So not bad, you know, little time, little development should play out very nicely. Love the additions for the offensive line because our offensive line has sucked the last couple of years. I think we went the first 6 or 7 weeks of the regular season of the NFL and we had 6 or 7 different combinations of offensive line. Not ideal. Then you get to the defensive back. Hey, listen, it's always good to have defensive depth, you know, especially when it comes to injuries and whatever else. And then you got Joe Milton III. Whether he'll play quarterback or not, who the hell knows? But hey, you're a welcome addition to the team. I would not be surprised if him getting signed means Bailey Zapp is bye-bye. Thank God for that because, boy, the Zapp diehards. I'll tell you, you want to meet a more diehard group of folks, the Bailey Zapp fans. And then you had the last one in Jaheim Bell. We'll see what happens. You know, they've got Hunter Henry and they got Austin Hooper as well. Maybe he'll develop into something. You know, they cycle out some guys and have a triple tight end formation going. Who knows? We'll see. But should be interesting.
Yeah, I think this year's draft, I mean, definitely had a lot of storylines going. I mean, I think the Bears had arguably the best draft of everybody.
I would say so.
Pittsburgh had a very solid one. Philly had another great one.
Cleveland was one I was looking at going, what the fudge are you thinking?
Well, I mean, this was their final tie-in with the Deshaun Watson deal.
Yes, all of their draft picks from the Deshaun Watson deal got taken and used.
Yep, so they definitely had a lot of room to work with. I mean, I think Atlanta had probably one of the more puzzling ones. So did Jacksonville. Yeah. So have a lot of storylines now going into the off season because OTAs are starting up and we're going to be talking very more soon. Football as we get going. It's that time of year because the NFL draft kicks everything off. So
yeah.
That being said, hit us up on the hashtag ODPHpod. How did your team do in the NFL draft? Let's talk about it, shall we? But first, we're going to take a quick break. We'll be right back.
Do you like comic books?
What about movies and TV shows?
Well, we may be the show for you.
We're Hops Geek News, a weekly podcast that discusses comics, movies, and TV shows while featuring a beer of the week.
Every week, we chat about what we messed up on the week before, and then we dive into what we're reading and watching, as well as some news.
We then wrap it up with a geek-themed topic of the week.
You can find us anywhere you listen to podcasts by searching Hops Geek News.
Cheers.
Coming back for another segment on this edition of the ODPH podcast. Time to talk some basketball, Pad.
Basketball is my favorite sport.
The playoffs are heating up.
Yeah.
And stars are emerging.
Yeah, they are.
Let us recap what has been going on in the brackets, shall we?
Yeah, so we're going to start out west because I know what you want to talk about, and I'm really going to twist the knife on you. We're going to start out west. One of the first round matchups in the west is the one-seeded Oklahoma City Thunder taking on the New Orleans Pelicans, who are the 8 seed. Currently, OKC. Up 3 games to none.
Yeah, not surprised there.
No.
No, but one thing I will say I really loved is after their last game, they walked right over to their hometown reporter to give first dibs on the interview after the game.
I mean, listen, it was close for all of the first game, 94-92 win. After that, OKC went, oh, right, we're the number one seeded team. We should win this easily.
Yeah, so, I mean, OKC is doing what OKC is doing.
Yeah.
I think they're going to obviously make this a very short series.
I would say so.
And then
you get to the biggest surprise, I would say, in the Western Conference. That is the fourth-seeded L.A. Clippers taking on the fifth-seeded L.A. Mavericks, where currently the series is tied 2-2.
Very shocked at this as well.
Yeah.
I mean, I think we all expected this to be a little more competitive as it is.
Right.
But to see how it's played out, too, and granted, the Mavericks almost pulled off the impossible in Game 4, coming back from being down very, very badly. This one, I think is going to go to 7. This one will be a fun one to watch. I mean, the Clippers obviously needed this game because if they went down 3-1,
right,
it was going to be a very short series. So now heading into Game 5, I mean, what do you got feeling, Pat?
Well, clearly looking at the numbers for this series, defense is optional. The Clippers are averaging 102 points a game. Mavericks, 101.3. And then your series leaders are James Harden with 26 points a game and Luka with 29 points a game. I mean, this has been one where it's gone back and forth. Clippers won the first game, Mavericks won the second game. Mavericks won the third game, then the Clippers won the fourth game. I'm gonna say probably the Clippers for this one. A little bit of home cooking, you know, they're playing this Wednesday as we record, but this one is probably gonna go the full 7.
Yeah, I think this is going full 7. I mean, the one thing about this is I could see either team really making a run here.
Yeah.
I just think that for Harden and legacy, they need this more.
Uh-huh.
It's almost weird to say, but I think for Luka and Kyrie Irving, if they got bounced, it would not be the end of the world.
No.
I think, though, in the Clippers storyline, though, it would be detrimental because I could see them.
Yeah, especially how much ish they were talking.
Yeah, and completely imploding that team. So I wouldn't doubt that. Okay. Speaking of imploding teams.
Woo-hoo! You had the number 3 overall seeded Minnesota Timberwolves playing the 6th seeded Phoenix Suns, who got swept, S-W-E-P-T, in the first round, 4 games to none, losing to the Minnesota Timberwolves. Boy, this is ugly.
This is an ugly situation in Phoenix.
Uh-huh.
Ugly, to put it as mildly and nicely as possible. The fact that Bradley Beal, Kevin Durant, and Devin Booker are all on that team making a combined, what, like $150 million together?
Uh-huh, something like that.
And yet you get swept by a team that most of the sports media is anointing. And listen, after watching this series, I have to fully agree. Anthony Edwards is the next Kobe, the next Michael, the next playoff, you know, aura, if you will.
Yeah.
Like, he is literally the guy that is single-handedly going to win games and carry his team into the next rounds each and every time out.
Sure.
Edwards had no fear this entire series, even to the point where he was talking so much right in Durant's face.
Uh-huh.
And not backing down.
Yep.
And even in the post game, he's like, to paraphrase, he's like, I'm out here to kill everybody.
I mean, listen, I think Bradley Beal had the best response when it came to just the way this went down, where he sat down to talk to reporters after the game was over and said, quote, well, I'll be damned, man. Like, Minnesota just came in and just walked all over him.
Mm-hmm.
And I think this is a moment in the NBA where very clearly we're seeing a changing of the guard. Where
mm-hmm. Oh, absolutely.
LeBron is still around. Durant is still around. The Hardens and the Westbrooks and the Stephs and the Clays and the, you know, Currys and whatever else. But, you know, the Golden State Warriors are out. So Steph and Clay and Draymond are done.
Mm-hmm.
Kevin Durant is gone. You know, LeBron, sorry Lakers fans and sorry LeBron fans. LeBron ain't making it past this first round. They pulled out a win. They could in theory pull off another one tonight, but they're not beating Denver.
Mm-hmm.
So this will be, I believe it was the first NBA playoffs without Durant, LeBron, and I think Steph since like 2005 or something absurd like that. It's been a while. You know, but Minnesota is the team that's kind of leading that charge into whatever the new era is going to be called.
Mm-hmm. Oh, I think so. I think Anthony Edwards has emerged as a superstar.
Absolutely.
I think if anybody's questioning that, like literally he has that mentality
yeah.
that the greats have. And especially in the playoffs, like the way he just dismantled the Suns. I mean, granted, his team played great overall.
Oh, sure.
But the way he carried himself, the way he attacked the rim, this was something I haven't seen since Michael Jordan and Kobe. Like, I'm just giving very honest, you know, observations here. And the fact that he went right after their biggest stars spoke volumes.
Yeah.
So the only thing that they lost is, unfortunately, their head coach had a very bad knee injury. Chris Finch was hit on the sidelines, and I believe he tore
something connecting his knee to his femur.
Yeah, it was wild to see. But the great thing was after the game, all the players rallied around him. They were in the locker room celebrating with him. Like it was a great moment to see.
Yeah.
And then you now have to look at Phoenix. And listen, I think the spotlight has to go on Kevin Durant.
I mean, I'm looking at his stats on NBA.com for this postseason. Played 42.1 minutes per game. Averaged 26.8 points per game. Three-pointers. Let's see. Made 1.3 threes per game. And then in terms of defensively, 6.5 rebounds a game and 3.5 assists a game. Like, that's not a bad stat line,
mm-hmm.
but, like, damn, it wasn't enough.
It wasn't enough, and I think that you have to look at how a super team is built, and that era is fading away.
Yeah.
That you had three superstars in Booker, Beal, and Durant.
Yeah.
It didn't work out. There's now rumblings that Devin Booker wants to go to New York next season.
Yeah, which, I mean, I can try the NBA trade machine, see if I can make that work.
Yeah, but...
Because I looked it up. Looked it up on SpoTrack.com. Devin Booker, very much still under contract. So This isn't going to be like, he signs in the offseason. Devin Booker signed a four-year, $221-plus million contract with the Phoenix Suns. That's just starting.
Yeah.
Like, it starts, it looks like, in the 2024-2025 season.
Mm-hmm.
So it hasn't kicked in yet. So it goes from 2024 through 2028. Good Lord.
Yeah, so to get him to New York, I mean, I don't know how that would work.
I can play the NBA trade machine.
Sure,
and try.
But on the flip side, does New York even want him right now?
Right.
Like, that's also a thing that we have to take a look at. I mean, if we even want to go and jump right there, the Knicks are putting on a display in that Eastern Conference right now.
Sure.
And for Philadelphia, as painful as this might sound, 76ers fans, the process is dead. there's no reason to trust it anymore.
Right.
It's over. Because you have Joel Embiid doing all he can, but it's not enough. The Knicks are fighting through adversity each game. I mean, granted, they're not blowing anybody out.
Right.
But they are scrapping, and they are definitely making their, you know, imposing their will, as we like to say with the UFC.
Uh-huh.
They're doing this, and the biggest tell sign is at the last game, game four, the Knicks fans showed up and made it sound like Madison Square Garden Jr.
Right.
And especially in Philadelphia.
Oh, Lord, yeah.
That spoke volumes. So now coming back to New York, you have Jalen Brunson, who, I mean, dropped 47 in game four. Ooh. Really found his stride. The Garden Tuesday night is going to be absolutely insane.
Yeah.
And I saw the players on Philadelphia's eyes after that game, and they looked defeated. They knew the season or series was done.
Mm-hmm.
And Embiid, I think, was very critical of the Philadelphia fans, as he should be.
Absolutely.
But now you have to take a look at that team, and honestly, they really have to talk about imploding that team.
Yeah, no, I mean, Philly has been, quote-unquote, trusting the process, you know, for like 10 years now.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't think they've even made it to the Eastern Conference Finals, let alone the NBA Finals. We know they haven't won anything.
Yeah.
But, no, you have to, you know, implode the team at this point and start over, because clearly Joel Embiid isn't it. He's never going to get it done in Philly. And it's sad to see what happened in Philly in terms of the fan base, because we know Philly's fans are, you know, well, Philly is not the team, but Philly fans. Sorry, Freudian slip there.
Mm-hmm.
We know Philly fans are rabid. Look at what happened when, you know, they won the Super Bowl with the Eagles. You know, they were getting ready for them to go back to the NFL and potentially win another Super Bowl against the Kansas City Chiefs. And the police department started greasing up the poles.
Well, the thing about Philadelphia is Philadelphia has always been a very passionate sports town. Love them or hate them.
That's my point. Like, they booed fucking Santa Claus.
Yeah.
The Phillies fans are as diehard as they come, you know? So the fact that you got clowned out in your own building, there's a video floating around on social media today as we record that there was a dude near the arena in Philly selling Knicks hats.
Mm-hmm.
In Philly. And I've seen multiple videos. I keep seeing the same video, but I've seen it a bunch of times today of the Knicks fans in the concourse of the arena there chanting FM Embiid in your own building.
Mm-hmm.
Wow.
That's the thing. I think unfortunately the team has lost the city. And now the next game is going to be a formality. I don't see this going to game six. I would be very, very shocked. But I think this is going to be New York's to win. And then their next opponent is a very big surprise to me, but I think, unfortunately, injuries played a big factor.
And you cannot sit here and tell me, Philadelphia fans, that, oh, well, the Phillies are in town playing a good team. No, they're on the West Coast playing San Diego. Don't give me this excuse bullshit.
Yeah, no, this was a very big miscue by the Philadelphia fans.
Right. We got to get back to the West because there is one more we got to allude to.
Oh, yeah, that's right, we did.
We did. It is the number 2-seeded Denver Nuggets taking on the 7-seeded Los Angeles Lakers, where currently Denver is up 3-1.
Well, I think this is a formality at this point.
Yeah, I mean, listen, LeBron, even you know, an old dog is going to show glimpses of its former self, you know, especially if it's like one of those show dogs that do like the tricks and the jumps and everything.
Mm-hmm.
They'll show glimpses in their old age, and LeBron still clearly has got a little bit left in the tank, but boy, Denver's just got a grip on this series, and it's going to be all over. They're playing tonight as we record, so this is going to be over.
Yeah, no, I if LeBron somehow pulls a miracle out and leads his team to the next round, it would be a literal miracle.
I mean, I've got a little bit of interest in this game because I was watching First Take today, and I know Stephen A. and Shannon Sharp have a bet. Well, they had a bet from the regular season where Anthony Davis wouldn't play more than 65 games was what Stephen A. bet. He lost that bet, so he owed Shannon Sharp a steak dinner. They've doubled or nothinged it because Stephen A. doesn't think the Lakers will win tonight. Shannon Sharp, being a Lakers fan, thinks they will. So that's about my rooting interest in this game is will the Lakers win or not? Because either way, Stephen A's got to pay.
Yeah, that's going to be a big question mark there, but I just don't see this going back. I think Jokic and everybody wants to get to the next round very quickly, get some rest in.
Jokic wants to go check and see how his horse racing is doing.
Well, I think because he knows that obviously if he's got to face the Minnesota Timberwolves, it's going to be a task. It's especially not going to be easy.
Especially when Minnesota's on rest now.
Yeah.
Then getting back to the East, as you alluded to, the potential matchup for the second round in the NBA playoffs would be between the Milwaukee Bucks and the Indiana Pacers, where Indiana is currently up 3-1. And as we alluded to, injuries being the issue for Milwaukee.
Mm-hmm. Now with Damian Lillard aggravating his Achilles.
Yeah, and Giannis very questionable.
Yeah.
If he's played at all. I'll be honest, I haven't seen much of this series.
No, this is just a formality. I mean, we're seeing Tyrese Halliburton just really going off.
Uh-huh.
And the Pacers are a very young team. That's why I think when they go face the Knicks in the next round, because they're up 3-1,
right?
I think it's going to be a real test for them.
Yeah, Giannis hasn't even played.
Yeah, that's why I say Milwaukee is just on borrowed time here.
Yeah.
I mean, it's sad to say, but it is true.
Yeah.
So I think Indiana is going to make short work here, and then obviously...
good for them.
Well, I mean, like I say, it's great to see the parity in the East. I like seeing that. I just think, unfortunately, they're not going to be able to match up with the Knicks.
They're too young. No.
Like I say, they'll give them some run, but I don't think enough to win, though.
Yeah. Then the other matchups you have going on in the East are the 4th-seeded Cleveland Cavaliers taking on the 5th-seeded Orlando Magic. And much like the 4-5 seeds in the West, East seeds also tied up 2 games apiece.
Yeah, this one...
Is there really anything going on with the series other than they're playing games?
Well, I think this is showcasing Orlando a bit.
Sure.
I mean, Paolo Banchero is definitely shown up, but this series really doesn't have any sizzle to it.
Right.
I'm sorry. Who you're facing the next round. So I don't think anybody.
I mean, it's nothing sexy when, and now I got to dig a little deeper because I'm on the NBA.com playoff preview page, whatever you want to call this, for the series where it gives you all the games and then it gives you like series averages and then series leaders.
Mm-hmm.
For Orlando is forward Franz Wagner, who's averaging 21.5 points a game, 8 rebounds a game, and 4.3 assists per game. Cleveland, it's featuring Jarrett Allen, the center, 17 points a game, 13.8 rebounds a game, and 1.3 assists per game.
Yeah, Donovan Mitchell has not looked great in the series, in my opinion.
Should have come to New York.
Yeah, just saying. Would have been a lot better.
And then the final matchup taking place over in the East is the 1th-seeded Boston Celtics taking on the 8th-seeded Miami Heat, and currently Boston is up 2-1.
Yeah, this one's surprising.
Don't let us get one.
I thought this would have been a sweep.
I did too.
Legitimately. I am just curious about how Boston shows up for game 4.
Like a fire and a bat out of hell.
Well, that's what I say. If they jump out early, I think they're going to make this a very short series, even with the 1 loss.
Because the game 4 is it tonight as we record, it's in Miami.
Mm-hmm.
We know from past experience, you know, watching all these games over the years, that Miami crowd can be rather loud. They're going to be, you know, you give them a little inkling, you give them a little hint of like, hey, we're still in this fight. We still got a chance. Those fans will respond, and they'll be loud. So Boston's got to go in and silence them.
Well, I think that's a big thing. Boston's won by 20 in both of their wins. So
that's true.
So they're going to show up, and I think they understand the gravity of the situation.
Right.
I don't think they want to make this go any longer than they need it to.
No.
So I think Jason Tatum needs to put on a show tonight. I'm just saying he's going to drop like 35, if not more. Okay. Okay. And I think we're going to have another repeat of game 3. I'm just going to put that out there.
Yeah. I mean, hey, Brown and Tatum definitely showed up the last game, 33, or the game they lost, 33-28. You just got to be able to shut down the Miami team because I'm looking at their points for the game. Yo.
Yeah. So, like I say, there's a lot of great storylines going on here. Any changes on your predictions, Pat, or are you kind of thinking it's going to be the same finals?
Still sticking with the finals. I got the Boston Celtics taking on the Denver Nuggets.
Yeah, I will say this. I think the Knicks are really showing a lot of heart, even though I will say the foul that Joel Embiid did on Mitchell Robinson, egregious, to say the least.
I saw that.
I think if it was the other way around, Robinson would have been suspended for multiple games. Just going to put that out there.
Could be my
opinion on that. But I still think the Knicks are going to make a run. But, yeah, I think ultimately this is Boston's to win.
I mean, the only way I can see this working in the Knicks' favor is if the Boston series all go long and the Knicks keep it short. Because, I mean, I realize this might be real simplistic to say, but it's worth mentioning. The shorter your series, the more rest you get.
Mm-hmm.
And the longer your series go, the less rest you get.
Yeah, so they definitely want to wrap things up early. And yeah, I do agree with you. I think that's their only real chance there.
Yeah.
Because, I mean, the West, I mean, the Denver series just got a little more interesting if they get past the Lakers. So I think, you know, Ant-Man versus Jokic, that's box office. That's real box office.
That's Friday Night Fights written all over it.
Yeah, so definitely a lot of storylines going in with the NBA playoffs. But in the meantime, hit us up on the hashtag OODPagePod. What is your feelings about the current state of the NBA? The playoff time is here. How's your team doing? Or what games are really sticking out to you? Let's have that conversation, shall we? But we're going to take a quick break. We'll be right back.
Hey all, I'm Frank. Join me and my friends as we talk about all things geek. Here at Geek Freaks Podcast, we go over the weekly news of everything in geekdom, from movies to TV, video games, and comic books. We also have a growing YouTube community. Join us as we go over everything in your geek life and share in the love of geekdom.
Coming back for another segment on this edition of the ODPH Podcast, time to talk a little pro wrestling.
Hell yeah.
WWE just had their draft. It's halfway done, so we'll recap that a little bit later. Mm-hmm. But, I mean, there really wasn't a lot to go off of this past Friday night, was there, Pat?
No, some good matches, some good stuff, but the main focus was the draft.
Yeah, which, I mean, the only thing that really stuck out that was shockwaves, if you will, Carmelo Hayes being taken super early in that.
Right, he was taken with the third overall pick, listed as NXT, but let's face it, he'd been smacked down the last couple of weeks and last month or so. But he was drafted to Friday Night SmackDown.
Mm-hmm. And had a great match against Cody Rhodes, setting up some things for the future.
Yeah.
So I love what they were doing there. And then just, I mean, to briefly recap about who was in the draft.
So Bianca Belair was drafted to SmackDown. Main event, Jey Uso drafted to Monday Night Raw. Carmelo Hayes, as we alluded to, was drafted to Friday Night SmackDown. Seth freaking Rollins drafted to Monday Night Raw. Randy Orton to Friday Night SmackDown. Bron Breakker was the first switch of the night, drafted to Monday Night Raw. Next switch was immediately after that, with Nia Jax going to Friday Night SmackDown. Liv Morgan stayed on Monday Night Raw. L.A. Knight, drafted to Friday Night SmackDown. Ricochet taken to Monday Night Raw. The Bloodline in Solo Sikoa, Tama Tonga, and Paul Heyman drafted to Friday Night SmackDown. And we should allude and should mention that the Tribal Chief withdrew himself from draft candidacy. So Roman Reigns, free agent. Or still on SmackDown. They weren't entirely clear. We'll see.
I think free agent. I think he'll just be like how Brock Lesnar was.
Yeah.
Can go to any show he wants.
Sheamus was drafted to Monday Night Raw. The Wikipedia page I'm going off of has him listed as SmackDown, but he'd been Raw since he came back the last two or 3 weeks. So who the hell knows?
That was before he went on an injury.
Yeah. AJ Styles was drafted to Friday Night SmackDown, and then Alpha Academy, Monday Night Raw. Andrade moved over to Friday Night SmackDown. Of course, that's not entirely a surprise. His wife is over on Friday Night SmackDown, so makes sense. And then one of the biggest shocks of the night, Kiana James.
Yeah.
Drafted from NXT up to Monday Night Raw.
Big move for her.
Yeah.
I was surprised to see that she was the first woman wrestler from NXT to get called up there. But listen, she'll do good things up there. They really give her time. Her character is quite interesting.
Yep.
So I think that she can definitely run away with a little bit of the spotlight there. I'm just curious, though, like how she's going to come in there.
Yep. And then some of the picks that were announced after SmackDown went off air on social media. Alba Fyre and Isla Dawn switched over to Monday Night Raw. Baron Corbin got drafted up to Friday Night SmackDown.
Oh, man. I was hoping he was still with Bron Breakker.
That would have been good.
Yeah.
Cedric Alexander and Ashante the Adonis drafted to Friday Night SmackDown. Ivar staying on Monday Night Raw. Shayna Baszler drafted to Monday Night Raw. The OC and Luke Gallows, Carl Anderson and Mee Chin drafted to Friday Night SmackDown. And lastly, and certainly not leastly, Zoe Stark drafted to Monday Night Raw. So nothing real super crazy, but like you said, Kiana James getting called up. Kudos to her. Carmelo Hayes going to SmackDown. Kudos to him. Although, like I said, he'd been on SmackDown. I think he might have made one or two appearances on Monday Night Raw, but it was majority SmackDown. So that didn't entirely surprise me.
No, there. Like I said, that one was not a big shock at all.
Bron Breakker to
Raw.
Raw was interesting. And Nia Jax SmackDown also surprised me a little bit. But I feel like Nia Jax's feuds on Raw are kind of playing out at this point.
A little bit.
Yeah. And then we have the rest of the draft tonight. And this is the announced pit draft pools or rest of the folks that are available as we currently record. Apollo Crews, Braun Strowman, Bronson Reed, Candice LeRae and Indy Hartwell, Carlito, Chelsea Green and Piper Niven, CM Punk. Damage Control, so Dakota Kai, Io Sky, Asuka, and Kairi Sane. Diamond Mine with Brutus and Julius Creed and Ivy Nile. DIY and Johnny Gargano and Tommaso Ciampa. Drew McIntyre, which kudos to him.
Recently resigned.
Resigned. Most baller way to announce it possible. A video from The Rock.
Mm-hmm.
The Final Testament with Karrion Kross, Akam, Rezar, Scarlett, and Paul Ellering. Giovanni Vinci. Imperium with Gunther and Ludwig Kaiser. Jade Cargill. Judgment Day with Finn Balor, Dirty Dominic Mysterio, and JD McDonough. Caden Carter and Katana Chance. Kevin Owens. Legado del Fantasma in Santos Escobar, Angel, Berto, and Electra Lopez. Latino World Order with Rey Mysterio, Dragon Lee, Joaquin Wilde, Cruz del Toro, and Zelina Vega. Natalia, Naomi, New Catch Republic, and Peter Dunn and Tyler Bate. The New Day with Kofi and Xavier. Odyssey Jones.
Wait, Odyssey.
Odyssey Jones is listed here.
He was still drafted on Raw last year. I don't think we've ever seen him debut.
Nope. Pretty Deadly with Kit Wilson and Elton Prince. The Pride in Bobby Lashley, Angelo Dawkins, Montez Ford, and B-Fab. Shinsuke Nakamura, Tegan Knox, and Tiffany Stratton.
You know, I mean, there's a lot of talent to be pulled from.
Uh-huh.
And kind of see how things play out.
Yeah.
So, you know, like I say, I'm expecting a lot of big surprises.
Yeah, that's the kind of rumor I've heard with Monday night. Is like there wasn't so many surprises on Friday, but there's going to be a bunch tonight.
Yeah. So we'll have to kind of wait to see how this plays out. Like I say, I think that we're going to have a lot of different, you know, shocks to
yeah,
say.
Yeah.
I would say, and I know I'm just going to say it, if it is the case, we might see possibly a MJF, if he's ever signed.
Right.
I would see him involved in the draft of some way.
I'm looking it up. Odyssey Jones did a couple house shows as recently as March of this year. Did a couple dark matches on SmackDown. Was on speed taping back in February. Oh, that's a house show. That's a superstar spectacular. That's a house show. Dark. Oh, good. No, he has not been on. That's NXT Live. All right, so if you want to technically count this, because it's technically TV, but it's not traditional TV, he was defeated by Dexter Lumis on an episode of WWE Main Event from March 27th of 2023. That was his Sorry, I should have looked one up. He was on an episode of NXT where he was beaten by Dijak, April 4th of 2023.
So he
has not been on any TV of any sort in over a year.
Yeah, see, that's...
He's been doing house shows, though.
That's kind of telling. So unless they really want to sneak him in with somebody and add him to a group...
Sure.
I mean, it's kind of weird. Like, I just remember he was announced, and then we never saw him. And he was taken, with a third-round pick. So have to wait to see. Like I say, the WWE draft is... You know, I'm expecting some shocks tonight.
Yeah,
They have to do something a little crazier.
Well, and especially with... You got to figure Friday they were going up against the NFL draft.
Mm-hmm.
Tonight, I don't think... There's a couple basketball games and there's a couple hockey games on. But you got to figure there'll be more eyes on the product tonight, you know, as we record. So there'll probably be some more shocks.
Yeah.
Then, more importantly, this upcoming Saturday taking place from Lyon, France. Check your local listings when this is taking place. I want to say this is taking place at like 1 p.m. 1 p.m. Eastern here in the States. But it is WWE Backlash. A lot of matches for this card. 5 of them to be specific. First of which is a tag team match with Randy Orton and Kevin Owens taking on the Bloodline in Solo Sikoa and the MFT. The Mother Effin' Tonga. Tama Tonga.
See, this one, I believe we'll see Jacob Fatu debut.
Ooh.
And I think that this one will go to the Bloodline. I don't think the Bloodline can take an L right now.
No.
With how they've been so dominant.
No, I mean, if you're going to have... Because I know the fan speculation and the rumor is Roman's going to come back. He's going to come back as a face.
Mm.
And the fan speculation is it'll lead to, like, Bloodline Civil War.
War games!
Yeah, so, I mean, you got to set it up. They got to be out. There's got to be a legit reason Solo Sikoa has... A reason to like be the head of the table.
Mm-hmm.
So they got to go on a winning streak.
Yeah, it would make the most sense for them to do so. Yeah. Like I say, but this one, I think Jacob Fatu, that's where he debuts.
Okay.
So I'll go on the limb there. But I think no matter when loses or draw, Bloodline wins.
I mean, you got to figure, because the whole Bloodline shtick is they have people run in and interfere to help them win. Well, one of those folks that helps to likes to help interfere is in this match.
Yeah.
So he's kind of ruled out. Jimmy Uso isn't coming through there anytime, so he's written off for injury, or just they're just keeping him off TV or whatever they're doing. But regardless, he got taken out. You know, Main Event Jay ain't going over there to help. You know, Sammy ain't going over there to help. Roman's off doing movies or whatever the hell he's doing.
Right.
Rock's off busy recording Moana 2 based off his social media videos. So you got to figure if the Bloodline is going to kind of keep up that, you know, heel shenanigans way to win, that would be the spot.
Yeah, it definitely makes the most sense.
Next up is a tag team match for the WWE Women's Tag Team Championships, and you've got the Kabuki Warriors in Asuka and Kairi Sane defending their belts against Bianca Belair and Jade Cargill.
This is going to be a great match. I am not doubting we have a new here.
Okay.
Depending on if anything goes crazy in the draft, because I don't, to my knowledge, Jade Cargill was not drafted.
Jade Cargill was not drafted, and if I'm not mistaken, with the way the draft works, the champions are
immune right now.
Immune right now, but the picks finalize on Monday the 6th.
Yeah, so unless something crazy happens there, I'm going to say Anu.
I'm going to say Anu, and it's going to get even wilder. They're going to have to figure this shit out, because I think Bianca's going to go one way, Jade's going to go the other way on the shows.
Well, if they're champions, they stay together, so that builds up a little storyline. Like, because they did that a couple of years ago with somebody. I can't remember who, though.
Next up is a triple threat match for the WWE Women's Championship with Bayley defending her belt against Naomi and Tiffany Stratton. Tiffy time.
Tiffy time is going to steal the show here.
I agree.
This is going to be a fun match.
It could be match of the night.
It could be, honestly. I don't see a title change, though.
No, I don't either.
I don't think they'll play hot potato with the belt. I think you will see a strong showing from Tiffany Stratton, maybe something post-match.
Sure.
But I think this is going to be Bayley winning one way or another.
I do, too. I think Bayley's going to end up pinning Naomi, because I don't think they want to have Tiffany eat a pin this early into her main roster career.
Yeah.
Next up is a singles match for the WWE World Heavyweight Championship with Damian Priest defending his belt against Main Event Jey Uso. I'm going to go out on a limb. This one's going to be a DQ. This will be a hell of a match. This will be a barn burner of a match, because both Damian and Jey can go out on a limb. But now that we know the certain fate of an individual on the roster, as we alluded to, which kind of bummed about. I was hoping for a summer of DM Punk that we could really have some fun with this. But now that we know he's re-signed, this man, already wreaking havoc on social media, is now going to wreak havoc in this match. He has got an axe to grind, or should I say a sword to grind, against both of these individuals. Going to be a good match. A lot of spots, a lot of fun. But this is going to be a DQ. Damian's going to retain, because McIntyre is going to come in and cost them both.
I'm going to go one up you here.
Okay.
I don't think McIntyre shows up for this. I think he's going to rest. He has an elbow injury, if memory serves me right. I think he's going to rest this one out.
Got to get him healthy, because the next pay-per-view, Clash at the Castle, and that's in Scotland.
Uh-huh. I think they're going to bank on him for that.
And
so,
what's he known as? The Scottish psychopath.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, so they're not going to mess around with that.
That's true.
I think what you're going to have happen here is Damian Priest retains via shenanigans. I think he's going to have some help, whether it's Finn Balor, whether it's Dom.
Well, Dom's hurt too, I think.
Right.
No, there was a rumor he is, but I think he said that he's not. We'll see.
Yeah, like I said, I think he can do something to run in or cause a distraction.
JD or maybe R-Truth.
Yeah, either way, like you'll have something happen here.
Yeah.
But I think as the Judgment Day comes in to attack Jey Uso, I'm going to go out on a limb, and I'm going to say Jimmy Uso comes in for the save.
Oh.
That he reunites here.
And says,
like, listen, I was wrong, but I need your help to take down Solo. He's out of control. And we start planting those seeds for Bloodline War Games.
Okay.
Just saying that.
I like that. I did not see his name listed with the potential draftees for Monday Night Raw tonight.
Well, I mean, he got injured, what, 2 weeks ago?
Yes.
So it would be a big surprise, a big moment.
Yeah, I could see him on Monday night after this pay-per-view, you know, going to he being Main Event Jay, going to Adam Pearce, being like, listen, I know he had some problems and he did some stuff in the past. I've talked to him. He's remorseful. He's sorry for what he did. He wants to make it up. He wants to really atone for his sins. Give him a chance. You gave me a chance, and look at what I've done.
Yeah.
And, you know, appeal to the better side of Adam Pearce.
And like I say, I think we might see that start here.
Yeah. Then the main event for a singles match for the undisputed WWE Championship, Cody Rhodes defending his belt against the face that built SmackDown Live, AJ Styles.
This is going to be a great match.
Oh, this is going to be a barn burner.
Yeah, this was the first time these two have actually ever faced each other, which is wild for me to think of.
Yeah, crazy.
So I fully expect them to pull out all the stops. This is going to be a great match. Cody is going to retain clean. And then it'll be interesting to see. I know AJ Styles has made some stories about like possible retirement sooner than later.
Yeah.
Depending on what he wants to do, but he wants the perfect story to go out.
Thing I think a lot of people forget, AJ Styles and John Cena are the same age.
Yeah. Well, and that's the thing too. I mean, they're up on that age, even though AJ's in phenomenal shape, no pun intended.
Yeah, no, he is.
I just think that they're going to do something to give him a proper send off because since he's been with WWE, I mean, he has literally been a marquee character.
Yes. So, also an upstanding performer.
Yeah, exactly. So like I say, they'll do something big for him on the way out.
Yeah.
It'll just be interesting. Like I say, I don't think it happens here, but we could see maybe the seeds happen for just, you know, that final tour. So
could be.
Either way, a lot of storylines going on in the WWE land, so definitely we'll have to recap that next week. But in the meantime, make sure you set those dials for 8 p.m. Eastern Standard Time this Thursday for Wrestling Night Live. Rich, Nick, and myself, I will actually be back in the studio this week. We'll be breaking down everything and anything going on in the world of pro wrestling, so we'll definitely have the links up for that on YouTube. But in the meantime, hashtag OTPHpod. Let us know your thoughts about the WWE draft, who do you think's going where, the reactions after it goes down, and then what's your predictions for WWE Backlash taking place this weekend? Let's talk about it. But in the meantime, we're going to take a quick break. We'll be right back.
This is Tom from Tom Joe Lou.
This is Matt from Sight and Sounds.
And you're listening to ODPH Podcast.
Wanna go where no one knows my name? To the desert, the oceans, or the plains? Cause I wanna.
Coming back for the final segment on this edition of the ODPH Podcast, Pad. What you got?
Got a couple things to talk about. First of which, obviously, being the local minute. And we're going to start with the Binghamton Black Bears.
Because
they were into the second round of this year's FPHL playoffs, the semifinals, as it were. Best of three-game series against Motor City, where they won both games over the weekend. First game by the final score of 4-3. That was on the road in Motor City. Second game was at home where they won by a final score of 3-2 in overtime. The game winning goal video is on their socials. Definitely check that out because they go nuts, understandably. So they are in the finals for the 2024 Commissioner's Cup in the FPHL. It is a best of five series where they will be playing Carolina. First two games are on the road in Carolina. First game is Friday, May 3rd at 7:30 p.m. Eastern. Then Saturday, May 4th at 7:35 p.m. Eastern. Game three is the following week, Friday, which is weird to say, but hey, minor league hockey. It's Friday, May 10th at 7 o'clock Eastern. That will be at home in the Visions Veterans Memorial Arena. Then you get game four. Which is Saturday, May the 11th, 7 o'clock Eastern. And then game five, if necessary, Sunday, May 12th, 6 o'clock p.m. Eastern. That will also be here in Binghamton at the Visions Veterans Memorial Arena. So for more tickets, information, all that good stuff, BinghamtonBlackBears.com.
Bring home the cup, guys.
Absolutely. We have not had a parade in Binghamton for a trophy a couple of years. It's been a while, I know.
2011.
Well, for hockey, the Ponies won one.
Well, yeah, Ponies always win.
Sorry, they were the Mets at the time, but same team. They did that a couple of years ago, so we'll definitely have to root them on and see how they're doing.
Mm-hmm.
Then got to switch over to the Binghamton Rumble Ponies because looking at the standings that for the Eastern League they're playing in, moved up a couple spots. They are currently sitting in third place, 500, 10-10, so definitely improving. Behind Portland, who is the Boston affiliate, who's ahead of them at 11-8, and then Hartford, the Colorado affiliate, who is 12-7. Looking to their games they had this past week, they were on the road playing the New Hampshire Fisher Cats. They lost their game on Tuesday by the final score of 7-1, came back on Wednesday, won by the final score of 7-6. Thursday, they won by the final score of 5-2, won again on Friday, 5-3, won on Saturday, 13-8.
Oh, jeez.
Pitching clearly optional.
Yeah, I was going to say.
Sunday, they lost by the final score of 2-1. This upcoming week, they got a home series. They are at home playing the Hartford Yard Goats. Yes, that is their actual name. This is definitely a big series going on there. They get a game Tuesday, May 30th, 6.05 p.m. Eastern. Then they got a game on Wednesday, also at 6.05 p.m. Eastern. Thursday at 6.05 p.m. Eastern. Friday at 6.05 p.m. Eastern. Saturday's at 1.05 p.m. Eastern. And then Sunday also at 1.05 p.m. Eastern. Couple of good promos you should take a note about. Obviously, Tuesday, 2 for Tuesday, they got that going on. Wednesday is their We Care Wednesday, which if you don't know what that is, they partner with one of the local banks. And each Wednesday, they feature a local nonprofit organization.
Oh, that's cool.
For their work they do to the community and make it a better place. Highlight they got this going on this upcoming Wednesday, May the 1st, excuse me, Strikeout Breast Cancer. So definitely a good thing they got going there. Thursday game is Thursday, and then Saturday game, May the 4th be with you. They will have Star Wars themed stuff, including jerseys and all this other stuff. Says, help us destroy those rebel scum as they threaten our peace, freedom, justice, and security of our great empire. I definitely dig that. And like I said, they'll have a specialty Darth Vader-inspired jerseys. I've seen the jerseys. Jerseys are sick.
Yeah, they look good.
And then obviously the Sunday game is a Kids Eat Free Sunday. So if you bring a kid 12 and under, they will receive a voucher for a hot dog and a small soda. Can verify. Those hot dogs are real good.
Mm.
Also should note, since it is May the 5th, it's also Revenge of the 5th, but it's also Cinco de Mayo. They will be playing as the Condores de Binghamton.
Ooh.
So it says, whether patrolling the mountain cliffs of the Andes or the hills of the southern tier of New York State, the condor inspires awe in all who see it. Los Condores de Binghamton are majestic, graceful, and athletic birds evoking the ball players who call Binghamton home. The colors of the uniforms of Los Condores de Binghamton honor the flags of Venezuela, Colombia, and Ecuador, nations where baseball is a treasured sport and where so much great talent in the minor and major leagues hails from. So that's definitely going to be an awesome thing to see. I love those jerseys. Love those uniforms. Definitely going to be awesome to see. More tickets, information on all that good stuff, bingrp.com.
Definitely exciting times happening here. Going right into summer. Now, you know, the more we're talking baseball, the more it feels like summer.
Speaking of baseball, one of the more egregious and awful incidents going on in the major league levels is finally getting rectified.
Oh.
And that's the player uniforms.
Oh, geez. Okay.
So reading from an article on ESPN.com, courtesy of Jeff Passan, says, quote, Major League Baseball plans to address its uniform fiasco after changes this spring to the standard jerseys and pants led to widespread complaints from players and fans, according to a memo obtained Sunday night by ESPN. The prominent modifications include a return to larger lettering on the back of jerseys, remedying mismatched gray tops and bottoms, and addressing the new Nike's jerseys' propensity to collect sweat, according to the memo distributed to players by the MLB Players Association on Sunday. The changes, which will happen at least at the latest by the beginning of the 2025 season, will also include fixes to pants widely panned this spring for being see-through. The union informed players of the coming changes in a letter that placed the blame on the Nike and the debut of its Vapor Premium uniform, which was advertised for its superior performance but remains disliked by players. Quote, this has been entirely a Nike issue, the memos to players read. At its core, what has happened here is that Nike was innovating something that didn't need to be innovated, close quote. The union also absolved Fanatics, the manufacturer of the uniform, that has received the majority of public scorn for the uniform mess, saying the company recognizes the vital importance of soliciting player feedback, obtaining player buy-in, and not being afraid to have difficult conversations about jerseys or trading cards. Our hope is that moving forward, Nike will have a similar approach, close quote. So this whole fiasco with Nike, Fanatics, and all that has been just a disaster. I know I saw a thing yesterday or this morning about how the Mets haven't worn their like all black jerseys.
Mm-hmm.
That's not because they don't want to. They don't have them.
Mm.
Which, I'm not a Mets fan, but those black uniforms are iconic.
They're very nice.
They're very nice. But like, you've had some teams not able to, like, they want to wear a special jersey on like a Sunday, Saturday. They haven't been able to wear them because they're missing one part, both parts, or everything else entirely. It's just been a fiasco. So the fact we're going to get something akin to fixing this is welcome to see.
Yeah, definitely excited to see about that. Yeah, this has been something that's been lingering around, so they definitely need to fix that.
Then we got some college football news because UAB is the first D1 football team to join the Players Association.
What?
Yeah, so reading from an article on ESPN.com says, quote, UAB football players say their entire roster has signed up for athletes.org, making them the first Division I football team to publicly join the Players Association. They were introduced to the group by an unexpected source, their head coach. Trent Dilfer gathered his team for a voluntary meeting in mid-April to encourage them to prepare for a future when college athletes might be able to negotiate for a larger share of their sports revenue. Quote, they're going to have a seat at the table, Dilfer told ESPN. I wanted to make sure I helped pour gasoline on something that is going to happen no matter what. I might as well use my influence to help it happen faster on behalf of our players, close quote. Dilfer introduced the team to athletes.org, one of several companies attempting to organize athletes for potential revenue sharing discussions. UAB players told ESPN every member of the team signed up to join the organization after hearing its pitch. The team has no plans to bargain with their school at this point, but their decision to join en masse is a symbolic of the growing momentum for players to organize. Quarterback Jacob Zeno said the move shows their players, the players' growing interest in having a voice in new model for college sports. Quote, in a way, we've been cheated out of money and decisions are being made behind our back, Zeno told ESPN. It's not really fair because we do so much for the sport, for the school, and the conference. We should at least deserve to know what's going on and what decisions are being made, close quote.
Well, okay. I mean, valid points.
Yep.
It's hard to say what's right and what's wrong because, I mean, this is going to be a precedent case. I think that you're going to see a lot more organizations lean towards this.
I agree.
And I think that with, you know, how we have the NIL going on right now too.
Yeah.
There's a lot of money that is now getting thrown around for college sports. So yeah. I'm expecting this is only the tip of the iceberg with all could this be. Happening. Could so be. It'll be interesting to see how the ramifications play out. So interesting story to keep an eye on moving forward.
Yeah. And then lastly, certainly not leastly, we got some fun news because coming up Saturday, July 20th, you know what you're doing.
Oh, I'm watching the Jake Paul Mike Tyson fight.
Exactly, because it's being streamed live on Netflix from AT&T Stadium in Arlington, Texas. Now, you might be sitting here wondering, Pat, Ken, why are you watching this sham of a fight? It's going to be scripted. It's going to go the full distance, and then all of a sudden at the end, they're just going to randomly just pick a winner and not tell us how they got to that decision. Or Tyson's just going to lay down in the ring, finger poke a doom style, and just so Jake Paul can say he knocked out Mike Tyson. As the saying goes, not so fast, my friend, because we found out today on ESPN, the fight is going to be a sanctioned professional fight, meaning there is no scripting in this. Well, unless you believe that kind of thing.
Allegedly.
Allegedly. But it ain't going to be like Jake Paul's other fights. There's going to be legit. There's going to be potential for knockout. Article reads, quote, the July 20th bout between YouTuber turned prize fighter Jake Paul and former heavyweight boxing champ Mike Tyson will be classified as a sanctioned professional fight by the Texas Department of License and Regulations. The heavyweight showdown will be contested over 8 2-minute rounds with each fighter using 14-ounce gloves. The outcome will affect their professional boxing records. Quote, Mike Tyson and Jake Paul signed on to fight each other with the desire to do so in a sanctioned professional fight that would have a definitive outcome. Most Valuable Promotions co-founder Nikisa Bedarian said in a statement to ESPN, over the past 6 weeks, MVP has worked with its partners to satisfy the requirements of the Texas Department of Licensing and Regulations to sanction Paul versus Tyson, and we are grateful that we have gotten to this point. Since the announcement of the fight, which will take place at AT&T Stadium in Arlington, Texas, and will be streamed on Netflix, there were questions surrounding what rules would be given to given the two fighters have more than a three-decade age difference. Tyson, 57, hasn't won a professional boxing match since a knockout win against Clifford at ETN in February 2003. He fought professionally twice after collecting his 50th win, but was stopped by Danny Williams in 2004 and Kevin McBride in 2005. By the time Tyson, 50-6, 44 knockouts, enters the ring in July 20th, he will be 58. Paul will be 27. The 31-year age gap will be the biggest in the history of professional boxing, eclipsing the 24-year age gap between Archie Moore, 49, and Mike DiBiase, 25. When they met in 1963, Moore defeated DiBiase by third round TKO, but he was also quite active, fighting four times as a 48-year-old before calling it a career at 49. Close quote. So I had no interest in this because, listen, no disrespect to Jake, you know, but all of his fights have been a sham. For former MMA guys, former NBA guys, YouTube stars, I was always of the opinion, put him up in the ring against an actual fighter, and then you'll have my attention. Right now, Tyson's the closest we've gotten to it.
Mm-hmm.
And I've seen the Tyson videos of him training. If you have not seen those videos, holy fuck.
Yeah.
Tyson's going to knock his ass out. Like, I realize some people are skeptical because of Tyson's age. I encourage you, go look up the videos. Tyson ain't no slouch. Tyson's still got a little pep in the step, as the saying goes.
He has muscle memory, and I think that now that it's a professional fight, yeah, this just got my interest. Jake Paul, like I say, has had a very...
Unique.
Thank you. That's the word I'm looking for. Road to boxing. And yeah, this is going to be a real test for him, especially if now it's a professional one getting regulated as such. Yeah, this is going to be one that I think, yeah, we're going to have to give our attention to.
Uh-huh.
Just going to put that out there a little bit. And let's cap things off, ironically, talking about the Capitals because they're gone from the playoffs of the Stanley Cups. The Rangers swept them in four games. Ovechkin and company did not have any answer for the onslaught of Panarin, Mika, and the team. Oh, this was a fun series to watch.
Announcers, like, can we stop asking, you know, or in commenting on Ovechkin? Like, yes, he's a great player. I'm not saying, like, oh, don't focus on him. But, like, he's 38 years old, 36 mm-hmm. years old, somewhere in there. And I looked it up, has been playing hockey at a pro or semi-pro level since he was 16.
Yeah.
And I tried doing the math on how many games he's played, but there's a lot of numbers out there, and I couldn't narrow down all of the actual games and whatnot between regular season, postseasons, and whatever, Olympics and international competition. Suffice to say, it's like close to 2,000 games if it's not over 2,000 games.
Mm-hmm.
There's a lot of wear on those tires.
Yeah. I think they just needed something to sell the story on because, obviously, Washington getting in a wild card position.
Sure.
The Rangers being the number one team in the entire league.
Sure.
They had to do some kind of selling for the story. But listen, this is the way it went, the way I thought it was going to go. Rangers sweeping.
Uh-huh.
Now it looks like they'll be facing the Carolina Hurricanes in round two. Carolina's up 3-1 on the Islanders. That's a very, very contested rivalry in the playoffs.
Yep.
So that'll be a fun series to watch. On the other half of the Eastern Conference, Boston is up 3-1 on Toronto. Florida is up on Tampa Bay,
right.
3-1 as well. So I think, obviously, it'd be pretty safe to say Florida and Boston are on a collision course. And then we'll see who's the Rangers will face in the finals. Because, listen, the Rangers are winning the Cup. We've already established this. It's just a formality. And I guess we'll just give a quick plug to the other side of the bracket in the Western Conference. Vegas is up 2-1 on Dallas in their series. Winnipeg is losing to Colorado 3-1. Vancouver is defeating Nashville 3-1. And Edmonton, who looked really, really good in their last game, is up 3-1 on the Kings. But listen, it's all just a formality. Who's going to be facing the Rangers? Because that is what we do here each and every week on the ODPH is Blue Shirt Nation every time out.
Hell yeah.
So that being said, for anything and everything that is the ODPH, you can find it at odphpodcast.com. That's it for sports this week. So for the one and only Padawan J,
fuck the Astros.
I'm your host, Kenem. Thank you as always for listening to the ODPH podcast. We'll see you next time.
It's such a waste of time swiping left and swiping right on people you could know. Cause anyone who's worth a damn be worth way more than a picture could ever show. You could find the right light, find the right angle, and never find your soul. And it can feel like a losing battle, and this plot is full of holes. This modern way of finding love just makes me feel so alone. And I can't be the only one sick of staring at my phone. So look up, talk to me. A better way to spend our energy. Just look up, talk to me. We don't have to blow the moon on the open sea.
time fable. Everyone has just one true love. All I know is you're across this table, and you're all I'm thinking of. So look up, talk to me, a better way to spend our energy. Just look up, talk to me, we don't have to float alone on the open sea. Ooh, ooh, talk to me. Ooh, ooh, talk to me. It's such waste of time, swiping left and swiping right on people you could know.